sporty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off in Canada, where Major League Soccer's 21st championship match will be played on Saturday. Toronto FC will host the Seattle Sounders in the MLS Cup Final. Toronto is the first Canadian club to contest for the trophy, and this marks the first time MLS expansion clubs are in the final. Toronto is in its 10th MLS season, while Seattle is playing its 8th season in the league. Toronto is captained by midfielder Michael Bradley, U.S. Soccer's 2015 Male Player of the Year. Bradley has been nominated for the award again this year, along with Toronto teammate Jozy Altidore and Seattle's Clint Dempsey. In addition, Bobby Wood of Germany's Hamburg SV and Jeff Cameron of England's Stoke City have been nominated for U.S. Soccer's 2016 Player of the Year prize, which will be presented later Friday night. Meanwhile, Major League Soccer's Most Valuable Player Award was handed out earlier this week to the captain of New York City FC, veteran Spanish striker David Villa.
This is my first award in big award in MLS. When I come in here, you know, and nobody, all the journalists know, I want to forget my experience in Europe because it's a new step in playing America. I want to make a story in America too, and I always say the same, no? The recognition of the people is the most important to me, and this award is so much.
David Villa scored 23 goals for New York City FC during the regular season, second on the league scoring charts, behind Englishman Bradley Wright Phillips of the New York Red Bulls, who had 24 goals. Our VOA football fans will remember David Villa lifted the World Cup with his Spanish teammates in 2010 in South Africa. Now 35 and in the twilight of a great career, David Villa took his considerable talents to New York City in 2014. He said then, and I quote, "I want to try to help MLS continue to grow and try to make New York City become the best team in the league." New York City FC, which kicked off its inaugural season in the league last year, finished fourth overall in the MLS standings and was eliminated by Toronto in the Eastern Conference semifinals. David Villa says Toronto's captain, Michael Bradley, was deserving of the MVP award, as well as other players.
Yeah, Bradley is a great player. He deserved this trophy, and Sasa too. They made a terrific season both. He scored a lot of goals, and this example I wanna say you have a lot of very, very, very good players in this league. Like now in the playoff, like Piatti, Altidore, Jovinko, Jordan Morris, a lot of big, big names, big players in MLS, and the people choose me, it's a lot to me.
That Spanish star David Villa of New York City FC, the 2016 Most Valuable Player in Major League Soccer. Born in the town of Langreo in northern Spain, you might say Villa, at least the past couple of years, has enjoyed an empire state of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm up at Brooklyn. Now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow. But I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra. And since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's. Took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus. Driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from.
Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
As we look back on the year in sports, one of the big stories was in early June when Muhammad Ali died at the age of 74. The former world heavyweight champion's influence went far beyond the boxing ring. Ali was one of the most celebrated and controversial sports figures in history. He was a civil rights activist, an anti-war protester, and a global goodwill ambassador. Muhammad Ali was many things to many people. His friend and former sparring partner, Larry Holmes, is one of only five men to beat Muhammad Ali. On October 2nd, 1980, in Las Vegas, Holmes battered and dominated Ali until Ali's trainer, the late Angelo Dundee, finally stopped the fight in the 11th round. My VOA colleague, Shaka Sali, the host of our Straight Talk Africa show, asked Larry Holmes for his thoughts when he heard Muhammad Ali had died. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2016, let's listen in again to what Larry Holmes had to say.
Well, I kind of like inspect it because, you know, a few months ago I was down there in Louisville with him, and he didn't look too good. And I said to my wife, I don't know about that. I said, I don't think he got too much longer. I said, he don't look good because he didn't talk. He didn't just sit there and just stood. And, you know, I was, like, worried, you know, and I didn't want to go back and see him again. But I went back and seen him again. He was still the same, doing the same thing. So, but I kind of expected. But one of the things about it hurt me. It hurt me because not only he was a friend of mine, but I think he was one of the greatest fighters ever lived in this world.
You happen to be one of the elite five boxers that, in fact, defeated at one time Muhammad Ali. But yet again, you happen perhaps to be a very unique individual, given that you were his former sparring partner, a friend, and of course, eventually a world heavyweight champion. What was it like to fight Muhammad Ali?
It was a good pleasure fighting Muhammad because, you know, he was my friend and he was my boss. And then I had to fight him, you know, but then it was the money thing, you know. If I beat him, I'd be the old man. If I lost, I never had anything. So, you know, my thing was not to take it hard on him because, you know, I knew how he would fight. And I knew that I could beat him. So I don't want to hurt Muhammad Ali because he is my friend. And so when we fought, you know, I told him, don't get hurt. Just don't go crazy. I said, I don't want to hurt nobody. I don't want you to be hurt. And, you know, he told me, shut up and fight, you know. And I did what I had to do without hurting him, I think. I don't think I hurt him. And, you know, we remained friends because right after the fight, I went back to his dressing room and I told him, I gave him a hug and told him I love him. And he said, if you love me, why you beat me up like that, Dad? So, you know, he was a great man, and he wasn't angry with me or nothing like that because it was about the money. He got $10 million, and, you know, back then, that was a lot of money, you know? So he was happy, and we remained friends even after the fight.
Any particular reason, Rally, why you cried after the bout? You don't seem really to have enjoyed the fight.
I don't enjoy the fight. He was my friend. He was my boss. You know what I mean? You know, he was a guy that helped teach me how to fight. I mean, when I first went with him in 1971, I was just an amateur. I was learning how to fight. And he gave me the opportunity to come to his camp and work out with him and learn from him. He gave me that opportunity. When I worked out with Muhammad Ali for the very first time, we went to Reading, Pennsylvania. He gave me gloves and shoes, everything to box with. And he gave me the opportunity to box. And when he boxed with me, of course, he gave me the black eye, right? He gave me the black eye, and I loved it. And I said, it's okay. He wanted to put ice on my eye, and I won't let him put ice. He goes, why? I said, because I'm showing this off. Muhammad Ali hit me in my eye. I said, this is nice. I can show it off. And, you know, he told me I was crazy, put the ice, but I never put ice. And then when I got home, I bragged about Muhammad Ali boxing me and giving me a black eye. It was a brag. Yeah, I bragged about it.
Now, knowing him the way you did, and of course you have to be one of the few very unique individuals that do that, do you sincerely feel, do you sincerely think that it was necessary for Muhammad Ali to fight the last two fights? I'm talking about yours and the one of Trevor Babik in the Bahamas.
Yeah, well, Trevor Babik didn't need to fight, but what it was about was the money. It was about the money with Ali. He started fighting for money after he couldn't beat me. He just said, I'll take a fight with money. And I didn't like that fight. I didn't think he should have took it. But again, you can't tell people what to do because, you know, the man, when I you tell him that he's a champ, I said, shut up. He can do what he want to do, so I don't say anything. Well, if he was the champ, in my opinion, he was always going to be the champ. So, you know, the Babik fight, the Trevor Babik fight, Trevor Babik didn't fight the Ali that I fought. If he did, he would have got beat.
You, again, happen to be one of the few people that interacted with him in a very special manner. What is it that during that experience, really, that you learned? What did you learn from him, and what did that interaction mean to you?
Hey, listen, I got the best jab in boxing. I had the best jab in boxing because of Muhammad Ali, because I tried to keep up with him. And when he threw the jab, I wanted to throw the jab. I wanted to beat him to the jab because everybody knew how Ali was. Everybody knew that he was a good jabber. He always jabbed right-hand combination. And I wanted to be like that, so I worked on that, to beat him to the jab. And that's why I lasted so long in boxing, because I had a good jab. Everybody had to worry about the Larry Holmes jab. And then when they worried about the Larry Holmes jab, then they had to worry about the right. And so they couldn't do both. And I was able to win the fight.
What was it like being with him in Zaire back in 1974? I'm talking about the Rambo in the jungle.
In the jungle. I was there with him. I was there with Muhammad Ali, the Rambo in the jungle, in Zaire. And and he trained good. I mean, you know, people love him. Ali Dumaye. Ali Dumaye.
I didn't kill him.
And a lot of people that didn't speak good English, but they know how to say Ali Dumaye. We didn't know how to speak African, so we said Ali Dumaye. You know, we said the same thing, Ali Dumaye. Ali Dumaye. And it was neat, and people, everywhere you go, people love you. You know, they run after, they take little kids running behind the car, Ali, Ali, Ali. I mean, you know, it was mind-boggling. And you know what Ali said? He said, boy, he said, you're home. This is home, man. This is what our people look like. This is what we look like. And you know, he was very proud to be in Zaire. And I was just as proud as he was because I was with the greatest fighter of all time.
Any particular reason why the people preferred Ali to the champion himself, George Foreman?
George Foreman, though, it was okay boxing. But, you know, but George Foreman, they didn't like George Foreman. I mean, you know, because Ali, they loved Ali, they didn't like George Foreman. Because George Foreman wasn't no Muhammad Ali. Everywhere Ali go, people go with him. But George, they didn't do that with George. That's okay, because I didn't like George either.
I see. Have you been to Africa, Larry, since 1974?
I did not go to Zaire, but I've been to different parts of Africa already. Yeah, I've been to different parts.
What is it like to be a world heavyweight champion of the world? And you were for many years.
Well, it was an honor to be the heavyweight champion of the world. It's an honor to represent black fighters that can be able to do something. It was great to honor white fighters if they work hard enough, they can be something. You know, it means something when anybody that works hard as I work can be anything that they want to be. You know, whether you're black, whether white, or orange, or green color, I don't care. If you work at something, you can always be that. Ali was living proof that if you work at it, you can be it. And he was one example. He immortalized boxing, and he would go down as one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I'm just glad to say that I was one of the guys who helped him become one of the great fighters of all time.
That's former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes. And Larry was talking with my VOA colleague Shaka Sali, the host of our Straight Talk Africa show, from his home in the eastern U.S. state of Pennsylvania. And that interview was originally broadcast on The Voice of America in June. For our VOA boxing fans keeping score, Larry Holmes's final fight was in 2002, a 10-round unanimous decision victory over Eric Butterbean Esch in Norfolk, Virginia. Larry retired with a record of 69 wins and 6 losses with 44 knockouts. Larry Holmes held the WBC heavyweight title from 1978 to 1983, and he also held the inaugural IBF heavyweight title from 1983 to 1985. Larry Holmes made 20 successful world heavyweight title defenses behind only Joe Louis at 25 and Vladimir Klitschko at 23. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Happy Friday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
Very happy Friday to you as well, Sonny. Good to be here.
What's trending in the sports world on this Friday, Andrew?
Well, we always like when we have these common threads that run through the sports stories. And today the common thread is Canada, our neighbor to the north. And we'll start with a big story, the McLaren report, of course, investigating the Russian systemic statewide doping allegations. And another part of the report has come out saying that more than 1,000 Russian Olympic and Paralympic athletes have been involved in state-sponsored doping. Now, this is connected to Canada because Richard McLaren, who is investigating the doping allegations for the World Anti-Doping Agency, is a Canadian sports law professor. And saying today, Richard McLaren, that the cover-up operated on an unprecedented scale. Mm. So very strong words about that. And a lot of speculation now with this new release. What did the IOC know? When did they know it? How far does this reach? And what does this mean for the future? There's a lot of questions about the 2018 FIFA World Cup being held in Russia, if that could be moved as a result of these allegations. Now, FIFA has come out on social media in a statement saying they're not planning on moving that 2018 World Cup, but still a lot of questions about what this means for athletics in Russia, the Russian athletes, and where they might or might not compete in the future.
I know there was lots of question marks about the makeup of the Russian team at this year's Olympics because of all the doping allegations, and what we saw was kind of a watered-down Russian team because a lot of these athletes that had tested positive were excluded from Rio. So this is a story that seems to keep getting bigger, Andrew.
For sure. And the Paralympic team, actually, they were banned altogether. They weren't allowed to compete in the Paralympics. And that's actually a move that's getting some praise now, saying that the Paralympics actually did a better job of addressing this than the Olympics banning all of the Russian athletes until they figured this out. So they're getting some praise while the IOC is getting some criticism, and they're wanting answers. Fans are wanting answers.
Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
So now that we've got that serious story out of the way, since it is a Friday, we'll do some fun ones. It's all having to do with Canada, as I mentioned, and we'll start with the MLS final, as you mentioned earlier in the show. The Seattle Sounders will be taking on Toronto FC this weekend in that MLS final. And as we've talked about on the show before, when two cities go head-to-head in a sports competition, the mayors of those cities have a little bit of fun sometimes, and they go back and forth, they taunt each other, and they often make bets saying, you know, if your team wins, we'll send you this or that, or if we win, you'll send us this. So Toronto Mayor John Troy had the opening shot in this back and forth. He said that he would send Canadian beer and Tim Hortons coffee if the Seattle Sounders won. He would send that to Seattle Mayor Ed Murray, and tweeting out a video where he says, we're not going to have to send this stuff, but just in case, on the off chance somehow we have to, we'll send these things. So Seattle Mayor Ed Murray responds. He said that he will send Seattle beer and Starbucks coffee. So in fact, Toronto Mayor John Tory tweeted out, he said, Tim Hortons versus Starbucks, Drake versus Macklemore, CN Tower versus the Space Needle, Toronto versus the Sounders. The bet is on Mayor Ed Murray. So a fun back and forth between the two of them on social media. They're having some fun with it ahead of that matchup this weekend.
And this historical note, as I mentioned earlier, these are two MLS expansion clubs vying for the first time. Both teams seeking their first league title. And they might see some cold weather in Toronto this time of year, Andrew.
I think it's going to be a chilly game, but if there's one thing that's warmed up the fans, it's this back and forth. Maybe they'll all be drinking, I guess, Tim Hortons up there or Starbucks. Actually, Mayor Ed Murray said in his little video, he says, you know, we're not going to be sending you the Starbucks, but it's okay because there are 10 Starbucks within a 5-block radius of City Hall in Toronto, so you can drink it on your own. So a very fun little back and forth, some nice competition, friendly competition between those two lawmakers.
That reminds me of a quick story when Paul Turgat, the Kenyan distance running star, visited our VOA headquarters, Andrew, back in 2005. And he says to me, I'm dying for a cup of coffee. Is there a coffee shop around here? I said, well, I think we got about 4 or 5 Starbucks within walking distance.
I think there's just about everywhere in the world nowadays you can get to Starbucks in a couple blocks. It's very ubiquitous.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, sticking with MLS soccer and specifically the Vancouver Whitecaps, another Canadian team. There's a Canadian young man, Kenton Doust, who is a big fan of the Whitecaps. Now, Kenton Doust has been battling brain cancer and actually beat that disease, and a big fan of soccer, big fan of the Whitecaps. And EA Sports is based in Vancouver. EA Sports produces video games for all the different sports leagues, including FIFA 17. So what they've done, they found out he was such a big soccer fan, they put Kenton Doust in FIFA 17. You can actually have him as a player in the video game. Very cool thing, a very nice thing they did for that young man.
Very
for his
nice.
Courageous battle with cancer. And Kenton Doust tweeted out, he said, it's amazing what they did for me and how much it helped me. And you look at his Twitter feed, it's all of these players from the Vancouver Whitecaps, from other MLS teams, just tweeting at him saying, great for you, congratulations on beating this disease, you're an amazing young man. So very nice for him. If you play FIFA 17, you might see Kenton Doust in the video game.
Nice story. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Have a good weekend, Andrew.
Thank you. You too.
And that wraps up the December 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This month, U.S. Ambassador to Malawi, Virginia Palmer, announced a new United States donation of $23 million to assist the Malawian people in need of humanitarian food assistance. This additional donation is in response to the Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee's report that 6.5 million Malawians need humanitarian food assistance to alleviate suffering through March 2017. All of these funds will be channeled through the United Nations World Food Program. Of the $23 million, $18 million will be used to help fill deficits in pulses and super cereals needed for the 2016-2017 Food Insecurity Response Plan, while $5 million will be used to purchase ready-to-use therapeutic food for HIV patients currently being treated with antiretroviral therapy, or ART. The latter is particularly important to preserve gains made to date in HIV treatment, as malnourished patients tend to discontinue ART without access to food to ameliorate the treatment's side effects. To further preserve development gains in other sectors, the United States government has also reprogrammed $12 million of previously planned investments in agricultural development and climate change adaptation programs. These were longer-term investments that now have been redirected to enhance the United States' responsiveness to the dire food security situation Malawi currently faces. They are primarily food-for-work activities, whereby beneficiaries will receive food for their contributions to resilience-building measures, such as afforestation, soil and water conservation, and small-scale irrigation. The additional assistance made available to Malawi brings the United States' total contribution to the 2016-2017 Food Insecurity Response Plan to nearly $118 million, equivalent to about 30% of the plan's $395 million estimated cost. Ambassador Palmer added that the United States will continue to work with the government of Malawi to break the cycle of food insecurity. The United States government continues to stand by Malawians in their time of need. But together, said Ambassador Palmer, we recognize that policy and market predictability are critical if Malawi's farmers are to become entrepreneurs, if agribusinesses are to invest, and if Malawi is to transform its agriculture sector from a source of vulnerability to an engine for growth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hi, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Sunday, we have a special from Cameroon. Eric Aliana, featuring his brand new album, Spirituality. Tune in at 0900 15 20 and 2200 UTC. You'll be glad you did.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Gambians across Africa and elsewhere rejoice at news that longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh conceded defeat in the country's presidential election. Today, Ghanaians go to the polls to elect a new leader. We take an in-depth look at the elections in the Gambia and Ghana right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Tuesday on Health Chat, Global Health and Human Rights. We will explore the right to health and health-related human rights. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Let's chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.